2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Taco Tuesday, PGA DFS podcast, presented to you by DFSArmy.com. This week we are staying in Texas for the newly named Fort Worth Invitational, but before we get into that, I must remind you guys that you can get a lifetime 10% off discount using the link in the description to check out DFSArmy.com and all of our premium content for all daily fantasy sports in one exclusive package. DFSArmy.com, use promo code TACO on signup, and you can check out all of the premium tools and articles that I'll be referencing here on the pod for PGA, baseball, the rest of the NBA season, NASCAR, got some good stuff going on. Definitely come check us out, DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO. Let's look into this Fort Worth Invitational, previously the Dean and DeLuca Invitational, and also previously the Crown Plaza. And while the tournament keeps changing names, the course stays the same. We are playing at Colonial Country Club, which is a 7,200 yard par 70, first par 70 that we've seen in a little bit here. And that means that we'll have less par 3s, less par 5s, and a real focus on par 4s this week. As you can see, we have 12 par 4s on this course, and only two par 5s, and neither of those are reachable. We do have four par 3s that are all over 190 yards in length. So long par 3 fantasy scoring, definitely something we're going to be looking at. And of course par 4 scoring, and the par 5 bombers might not be quite as successful. This is a bit of an accuracy course, and I've added a new section to the research section that helps break it down quite a bit, sort of similar to what we have in our NASCAR content, except for instead of looking at past results by starting position, we're going to just look at finishing position here and just look at each segment of the field. You can easily see where guys, you know, the winners, top 5, top 10, guys who finish 10th through 20th, 20th through 30th, and so on and so forth till you get to the bottom of the field. You can easily see which stats correlate with success here as they scale up and down depending on where people finish here. And I've also got it broken down by guys that made the cut and guys that missed the cut. As you can see here, guys that make the cut average 66.6 fantasy points, and those who miss the cut average 23 fantasy points. Obviously a 43 point difference there is pretty huge, but you can see with some other stats, just looking at the guys who make the cut and who don't. Driving distance, not that much of a factor this week. It's really kind of random. You know, guys that finish between 90th and 110th, they average 292 yards off the tee. And so do the winners here. And guys finishing top 5, top 10, they average 292 off the tee. And the off the tee stats are going to be a little bit, well, at least for driving distance, they're going to be kind of random and non-corollary, as this is a less than driver course, a tighter course for sure, and with it being a par 70, distance is just going to give you a little bit less of an advantage here. But if you look at driving accuracy is pretty much the recipe to success here. Ultimately, if you go from the bottom and just look up, every single step up in position, you get higher and higher driving accuracy percentage. Guys who miss the cut average 53% of their fairways hit. Guys who make the cut average 58%. Winners average 63%. You know, guys who finish in the top 10, 61%. That's where just the bottom of the field are your guys hitting about 50% of the fairways. It's just such a clean gradient from top to bottom. So we can see that driving accuracy matters here. And greens and regulation percentage as well. And as far as strokes gained stats go, strokes gained off the tee and strokes gained around the green doesn't look like they matter a whole lot this week. Around the green, more so than off the green, there is a slight gradient with strokes gained around the green. Guys who make the cut, only 0.1 strokes gained per round around the green is where players who miss the cut lose about 0.2 strokes. But the same goes for off the tee, actually. It's the exact same number, 0.1 strokes gained off the tee for guys who make the cut and 0.2 strokes lost for those who miss the cut. But if you look at strokes gained approach and strokes gained putting, you can see that those two matter a whole bunch more, especially approach. 0.35 strokes gained per round for guys making the cut when it comes to approach, and they're losing almost an entire stroke per round, guys that miss the cut here. With putting, it's almost the same thing, 0.3 strokes per round for guys making the cut, and 0.7 strokes lost per round for guys missing the cut. And you can see the winners here gain almost a stroke and a half in both approach and putting, while off the tee and around the green, they're gaining just about 0.3, 0.4 strokes. So it's funny how these strokes gain numbers kind of work in tandem. But I would still focus more on strokes gained approach. I know that I say that every week, but this is certainly the ball striker's course here. So I'd focus on strokes gained approach more than strokes gained putting, as that has a lot more randomness to it. Of course, it's gonna, if you're good on the greens, you're gonna end up having a good time here, and we are going to be looking at some good overall putters, like your Steve Stricker types. But strokes gained approach, I know it's important everywhere, and it's just the highest quality strokes gained stat to use week to week usually, but especially at a course like this where gaining strokes off the tee isn't that important. Usually strokes gained around the green, it can only matter so much, and strokes gained approach matters all the time, but strokes gained off the tee is usually the wild card stat where some courses require you to gain a lot of strokes off the tee. This is a less than driver course, so we're going to be looking a lot more towards driving distance, or driving accuracy, as driving distance doesn't matter as much this week, just due to a lot of dog legs being on this course, and the lack of par fives. Really, it's all about the driving accuracy and greens regulation this week. Those combined actually make for the ball striking stat on PGAtour.com. But it's better just to individually look at driving accuracy percentage, greens regulation percentage, and strokes gained approach, and kind of get a good idea of who your good ball strikers are. If you look at results by strokes gained here, again, you can see how approach and putting kind of really stick out. And you can see guys that that gain over a stroke and a half approach, they put up 73 fantasy points on average, and that's a pretty big mark. I'm sure not a lot of people are able to do that, but still, man, if you're just striking the ball well, especially on some of these longer par threes and par fours, I mean, that's where you're going to make your bread and butter this week. Now, the par fives, they're not really reachable. They are on the longer side. Maybe like a John Rahm type might be able to reach the one. The other one I know is out of range for everybody. But those are going to be three shot holes, and those can actually benefit your shorter drivers. You see guys like Kevin Na do pretty well on them because they know that there's just no way anyone's going to be able to gain an advantage on them by bombing the ball out and being able to putt for an eagle. Now they'd have to, hope to hit like an easy wedge or a chip shot for an eagle, but they'd have to put themselves in a lot of risk on their second shot to be able to do that. Where if you're just going for the birdie here on these par fives and you're a solid ball striker, it's just a super easy three-shot green. Your safe drive, and it's pretty much a layup for your second shot into a very easy wedge shot. So that's why you see on the longer par fives, the bombers aren't necessarily they don't have quite as much of an advantage as they do on some of the shorter par fives, and that's something that's interesting to see just when you're breaking things down. Of course, it varies person to person. Like, for example, Jordan Spieth, a lot better on short par fives compared to long par fives, where he struggles a lot. But That's just one factor out of many that we're going to be looking at here. Looking at the recent years at this event, last year there was some weather, I do believe it was some wind, that kept scores real low. Minus 18 was the winning score by Kevin Kisner, as where Jordan Spieth had won the year before at 25 under par. It averaged almost 3 strokes under par last year, as where in 2016, 6 strokes under par, 2015, 7 strokes under par. Go all the way back to 2010, you had a crazy year where the course was extremely easy. One of Zach Johnson's multiple victories here, he won at 29 under par. The field averaged 11.5 strokes under par. And you can see just how hard these fairways are to hit. Year to year, our driving accuracy percentage ranges anywhere from 53% to 57%, which is under average for most PGA Tour events. So these fairways are a lot harder to hit. And the greens and regulation percentage, that's one stat that does fluctuate a lot year to year. Last year we hit 58% of our greens and regulation, as where the year before that we hit 65%. So I think that's something that's going to depend on the weather. Perhaps it might also have to do with the speed of the green. And if we're looking into the weather so far this week, it looks really good. Minimal winds, as I can see right now, but you'll have to come check us out in our premium VIP Slack chat you can only get with the DFS Army membership. Use that promo code TACO. There we go. Come check us out on Wednesday, and we'll have a weather breakdown for you guys. See if there are any tee times that might be juicy. I'm going to guess not right now, but you never know what could happen come Thursday. So be sure to check that out, as it is a Texas event. And we've already seen from some of the Texas events that we've gone to over the last month or two that weather can definitely play a factor, and you can get some pretty nasty winds going on here. So just going back to the averages by finishes real quick, just to look at the 70 to 80 mark, you know, your cut line range, that's averaged, on average they score about 2.5 strokes under par. You're kind of looking at it. I would wager that the cut lines we're looking for this week are going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of, if it plays like last year, you know, the weather somehow picks up or something, we're going to be looking at like a 2 under cut line, but more than likely we're going to be looking at a 3, 4, or 5 stroke cut line. Just like last week, it should be playing pretty easy. That would be my guess, but again, we'll have to see. And just the last note I'll make about the course, eagles are very hard to come by. We only had 0.04 eagles per player last year. So really, when it comes to fantasy scoring and GPPs, you know, we tend to look for eagle opportunities with people. But really, we don't see anybody really scoring eagles. So fantasy scoring should be a little bit kept in check this week. And I think you want to stick to a lot of your safe and steady guys for sure. The guys that you think might not have the most crazy GPP upside this week are kind of the guys you want to look to. It's a par 70 course. You got to play it a little differently. You just want to be safe, safe, safe. So looking at the field here, you've got 4 standout studs and then a few guys in the upper $9,000-$10,000 range on DraftKings that are either guys just doing really well recently or breaking out onto the scene. Start here with the big 4. You almost want to say the big 3 with how Fowler's been playing. We'll call it the big 4. You could almost include Webb Simpson here in this big 5, but we'll talk about him later, even though his odds are around the same. Let's take a focus on Jordan Spieth, John Rahm, Justin Rose, and Ricky Fowler up here. Your big names, the ones everybody knows. Last year, Jordan Spieth and John Rahm were runner-up, tied for runner-up here at this event, ultimately losing out to Kevin Kisner. They played really well, and Spieth has a particularly fantastic course history here. the last 3 years. It's looking like his course history at the Masters, a runner-up in 2016, he won with that crazy performance, and then runner-up also in 2015. And then in 2014 and 2013, he sucked with a T14 and T7 finish. Terrible finishes for him. But yeah, this is probably his best course outside of Augusta. Like, these are his stomping grounds here in Texas. Just an excellent event for him. And last week we saw him come in at that 5-1 number with how weak the field was. This week we see him at a similar price, at the 8-1 number. But given that course history here, it's almost acceptable to pay for that. And you know, Rahm and Rose, those are some real bombers right there. I know they're hitting it with some accuracy, but it seems like the course could play into Spieth's favor here a little bit with his approach to the green numbers that just stick out significantly over Rose and Rahm. He's one of the class of the field when it comes to approach shots. Rahm and Rose, not so much. Rahm has actually been losing strokes approach. But if you look at their overall numbers, adjusted field rank, these three stick out more than anyone in the field. They are obviously top-class golfers. They all come in at 83% average field rank. So adjusted for the strength of field, they beat, on average, 83% of the golfers that they play alongside. And those are the best numbers in the field. They're followed somewhat closely by Cantlay and Steve Stricker, who only plays a part-time schedule. And these are just your well-known, just great commodities. These are like your I don't know, Amazon, AMD, Tesla stocks. I might be a little bit off there, but you know what I mean. Like, just really safe investments. And they're going to be popular with namesake. I don't know about Ricky Fowler. He's been struggling here, and he hasn't played the course since 2014, where he missed the cut pretty badly. So his ownership is not going to be near the levels of Rahm, Rose, and Spieth. And it's hard to go against Rahm at all. He almost missed the cut at the Players. He was looking so good and just blew up on Saturday. Just had a horrible round. But outside of that, Rahm has looked pretty perfect. 92% made cut percentage is just disgustingly good. And Rose has been on fire this entire season, hasn't missed a cut. Lots of top 10 finishes. I haven't seen a ton from him recently. He was the chalk at the Masters and finished 12th, and came back at the Players 23rd there, and that's the last we've seen of him. He's really only playing these bigger events, and he hasn't played this course in a decade almost. So it'll be interesting to see where Rose comes in. It's kind of hard to make out what he's going to be as far as DraftKings goes. He's somewhat appropriately priced there, but on FanDuel, he's more expensive than Rahm is. So Rahm makes for a great value over there on FanDuel, and that kind of sticks out a little, obviously. But again, I know that Rahm debuted fantastically here last year, and overall he's just one hell of a golfer. Only concern with him is that he gains almost all of his strokes off of the tee. And I don't know if this is a course where you could do that. He did do that last year. He was just bombing it everywhere, doing them risky shots over trees for the dog legs and stuff. And that can get you in some trouble. But he's just been hitting the ball so purely. And he also just destroys the medium and long length par fours, and there are 10 of those on the course, and he does awesome at both of those distances. So in GPP, I do love me some Rahm. I just wouldn't go that way in cash, maybe on FanDuel because of the value, but I don't know, I might go a different direction on FanDuel altogether, or just stick with Spieth or something. Although the most expensive guys on the board just have not fared well this season so far, and Spieth wasn't, he was all right, he 21st last week. It wasn't really worth the exorbitant price, even though he was by far the best player in the field. This field sort of seems like a field where the top, the cream of the crop will sort of rise a bit. definitely less variance than a week like last week, where we didn't even know anything about the course. So it's just good to have this data from previous tournaments to look at the field here. But yeah, you can't really go wrong with any of the top four guys here. Fowler, you're definitely going to get a discount on him at GPP with his ownership. And he has been playing like horribly, just missed the cut at the Players. And that's one of the most forgivable missed cuts on tour with the way that Sawgrass is. So looking at the next guy, the final guy in the $10,000 range on DraftKings, Webb Simpson, coming off that huge win at the Players, won by several strokes, just coasting on Saturday. He hit a 73 and just didn't care because it didn't matter. He was winning by a ton, like five strokes most of the time. The dude's been on fire. Top 20s, basically in every event he's been in the last month, really since the Honda Classic, he's just been on a rampage, gaining strokes, putting like crazy amounts. He had always been an excellent tee to green guy, always great with his approaches, something that made him not our highest value play at the Players, but our second highest value play. Thanks a lot for the MDF, Zach Johnson. But he was so mispriced, I'm pretty sure he was everyone's biggest value play during the Players. But we had Webb Simpson locked in at the second highest projected value on the board, and boy did he come through. And a lot of that was because of his approach numbers, which are still great, but right now he is just tearing it up on the putting greens, and that's really what he did all during all of Sawgrass. He just destroyed those greens. He had always been someone that just sucked at putting, but was great tee to green. And now if we're looking at it, he's a guy that's putting really well and is still really good tee to green. He just doesn't gain strokes off the tee because he doesn't hit it very long. But he has a pretty good driving accuracy, and you don't need to hit it long here. And his course history here is awesome, 5th and 3rd last year. Last year was the T5 and 3rd in 2016, but still, top 5 finishes, he's going to be somewhat chalky, I would have to imagine, with that course history and with his recent finishes and him coming off the huge statement win. And being $10,200, I see people on PlayDraft, on the snake drafts there, guys are taking Webb Simpson over Ricky Fowler at a pretty regular clip. And a lot of these are they have the experienced players marked with different levels. And you've got high-level experienced players taking Webb Simpson over Ricky Fowler straight up. It's also kind of worth mentioning that there are a few guys over there, especially in Aaron Wise we're about to talk about, and guys like Chesson Hadley, Bo Hossler, etc. They're way, way mispriced on their projections. So something you Army members really ought to do, go over there on playdraft.com, and be sure to use promo code FFGEEK if you're going over there and signing up today. FFGEEK for playdraft.com or draft.com. But on their snake draft, just the key is to just either use our fantasy points projections or just the Vegas odds. I do recommend the fantasy points projections. Just sorting it by that, doing your pre-ordered rank, and you will see a few guys that are just way out of whack. You've got like Pat Perez is one of the top ranked guys, and he's missed like 3 cuts in a row at this point. You can just kind of tell that their projection system seems to go off of, I guess, like a 2-year rolling average or so. You can kind of tell by the guys they have projected highly and those who don't, and they severely punish any new player. So you've got a guy like Aaron Wise who won last week and was runner-up at Wells Fargo, and he's coming in at like 30-1 odds, yet he's priced down there with the scrubs that are like 200-1. So definitely take advantage of that this week. And speak of the devil, let's talk about this Aaron Wise kid. He's a 21-year-old kid, just got his first win on tour at the Byron Nelson, runner-up in Wells Fargo, like I had said, and just absolutely ate shit the week before that, 139th at Texas. So he's still a young, strapping young lad, got a long ways to go in his PGA Tour career, but he's obviously off to a really good start, been hot fire the last two events at least, and he makes for a severe He just has a severe pricing discrepancy on the sites. He's actually more expensive on DraftKings than FanDuel. Just like last week, actually. It was the same thing. He's $9,600 on FanDuel. Only $9,400 on FanDuel. Should be supreme chalk over there. Like, ultra chalk. Now, there are only two ways to really look at this guy. It's either a get it now before it's gone sort of thing, which I think we're almost sort of past that point, at least on DraftKings. And FanDuel, he'll be so chalky. It's like, what's the point? Or just fade because he's so, you know, so young and unknown and coming off the win. We've seen a lot of guys just get crucified coming off of a win because they don't really care. Could go either way. With Wise, let's at least try to look at it from a statistical standpoint here. He does significantly better on short par fives and long par fives from what I'm seeing so far. Of course, a lot of his data is... he has a decent sample size. We have 23 events from him, but it does seem like he is not as good as on the long par fives compared to long par, the short par fives. And the long par fours are actually the biggest struggle in his game, and there are four of those on this course. So just by looking at the course fit, he does do pretty well at the longer and medium length par fours. So, what the main part of this course is made up of, he's pretty good in that regard. He just struggles in the other areas, especially the longer par threes that we see in this course. Hits the ball over 307 yards with a 63% driving accuracy, so he's really good off of the tee. But when it comes to approach, gaining strokes approach, he actually... is like dead average to the field, and we can see his average field strength comes in at -1%. All the other studs are around that 3 or 4% mark, so they're playing in fields 4% stronger than the average PGA Tour golfer. He's playing in fields, you know, all of his data comes from fields that are 1% weaker than the average PGA Tour event, and you know, we'll see that rise as obviously after this win when he's invited to all the majors and whatnot. But, you know, the case for fading Aaron Wise this week is really strong in my opinion just because he gains all of his strokes off the tee. I know he has a really good driving accuracy for his distance, and that's something to like, but just given the fact that he's coming fresh off the win and has a second place finish right behind him to really bolster the ownership, you know... You got Jimmy Walker, who's cheaper than him on DraftKings at least, who actually has better odds to win here. And you've also got Koepka and Scott and Cantlay, who all have better odds to win as well. And on FanDuel, he's just going to be so chalky. You know, you might as well fade him there just because anything could happen. Could have another miscut. So, you know, it's hard to really know with him. He's just such a young... somewhat unknown commodity, although I'm very, very bullish about his future. I think a lot of people are. He's definitely going to be one of the next, I don't know if he's for sure going to be a stud yet, but it really does look that way. He's already an NCAA champion with Oregon, and now he's going to, he's got a win on tour, you know, looking like Cantlay a little. Not quite the consistency of Cantlay, but he does boast a quite a bit of upside. So looking at Wise mostly as a fade this week for those reasons. Then you've got Jimmy Walker, $9,500 on DraftKings, $11,100 on FanDuel. He's had a really, really hot string of recent results here. Fourth in Texas, second at the Players, and sixth last week at the Byron Nelson, even top 20 at the Masters. He did miss the cut by a stroke back at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. He was also 28th at Valspar. And, you know, beginning of the season, he was going back and forth between, like, missing cuts and, like, coming 8th at Pebble Beach. So he's got a game we're looking for in GPP for sure. And I know that he's been really up and down since the diagnosis of Lyme disease last year. He had won the PGA Championship got his first major. Then after that, he just, you know, with the, mainly with the news of Lyme disease, it really took a toll on him for like an entire season. He's really gotten it together as of late. He's still dealing with some of the afflictions, but you've got to remember that before, Jimmy Walker was about this good. He was, especially during the West Coast swing, like he was a top-tier golfer. This guy cost, at one point, he cost over $13,000 on DraftKings. I shit you not, for the Sony Open back in the day. He's a really good golfer, and he'd always been sort of a total driving power bomber slash good putter. We can see that his driving distance has certainly gone away from him, hitting a hair under 300 now, as we're used to power the ball a little more, but he's still a very good putter. He loses his strokes off the tee. Other than that, he gains strokes in every other regard. And if off the tee, strokes gaining, I'll say it like this, it's a lot better to say it like, if gaining strokes off of the tee is not going to be as important this week, and everything else pretty much is, especially putting and approach, why not play some Jimmy Walker? He's basically just like Aaron Wise, but the opposite. The exact opposite in almost every way, except for recent results. And underneath him, we've got some really well-known names. Matt Kuchar, Brooks Koepka, Adam Scott, all coming in at around 30-1, 28-1. Kuchar has pretty good success here in the past. A bunch of top 15 finishes. He did miss the cut by a stroke in 2014. He had his first missed cut in like almost 2 years last week at the Byron Nelson. Just had a crap week, but he usually bounces back from missed cuts pretty well. He's not one to miss several cuts in a row. He just doesn't do that. Long term, he still boasts just an incredible 32%. Top 10 percentage, so he's still hitting a top 10 in a third of the events he plays in, and it still holds up to this date. The PGA Tour said it just last week. Over the last 5 years, no golfer in the world has more top 10s than Matt Kuchar. So while he's not been a winner, he has certainly been, like I always say for him, the beacon of consistency. Not last week, but in general, he's usually someone that's going to make the cut more often than not, has a good success track record here, and will have reduced ownership coming off of the missed cut last week. He wasn't even really that popular last week to begin with. This week, he will certainly not be popular. He is someone that I like to usually just approach in cash and avoid a GPP, but I might swap that around this week. I usually don't like to play guys coming off a missed cut in cash. I might with Kuchar, but he's not like the greatest value. He's still priced pretty high, like $11,500 on FanDuel. That's pretty crazy. So Kuchar, I mean, on FanDuel, I'll probably play him on GPP, honestly. A few weeks ago at the Players, that was the case. He was extremely high priced on FanDuel and very low priced on DraftKings. He was kind of chalky on DraftKings, is where on FanDuel, nobody had him. He ended up being a really solid play there. But it was a lot better when he was like top five for a good portion of that. But Brooks Koepka, I think it's safe to say that Brooks is back. Like I had told you guys when I was at Quail Hollow, I had talked to Brooks myself during the practice round. He told me 100% on his wrist. And he wasn't lying. He's a man of his word. He ended up making the cut at the Wells Fargo, finishing T42. Then a couple of weeks ago, at the Players, T11, really solid outing for him. I think it's safe to say he's back. I'm going to go ahead and say it. The boy is back. He's never played at this tournament before, but I could see him lighting it up here. He does have some driving accuracy concern. That's one thing that does stick out, and his double bogey worst percentage, worse than anyone that we've talked about so far. But, you know, it's hard to look at a lot of his stats right now. He's still quite skewed from missing all that time and having those horrible events over the swing season where he was finishing like dead last and just doing horribly. So I'm all aboard the Brooks Koepka train this week. I have no problem with that whatsoever. Long term, We have he's played in so many no-cut events over the last 2 years. He's played in 30 events, but only 20 of them have been cut events. But in those 20 events, 53% of the time he finishes top 20. That's a really sick number there. And we know long-term, that's about what he does. He does have a really high upside for finishing results. So if he can, he was sniffing the top 10 at the Players, and I think he can definitely break it this week. I could see him being like a first-round leader type. And Adam Scott, same odds for him, 28-1. Almost the exact same price, but $100 cheaper on both sites. He won this event back in 2014. If we go back and look, he won with a score of 17 under, so one of the lowest scoring wins that we've seen in recent history. And he hasn't really done a whole lot since. He didn't even play the event last year, just T55 in 2016. But you know, outside of that win, it's hard to say that he has like great course history here, because it's really just that win. But he has turned it around recently, ninth at the Byron Nelson and T11 at the Players Championship. I know that he had a little rough stint there, missing the cut by a stroke at the Wells Fargo and having a really bad outing in Texas. But, you know, Scott has slowly climbed up in price all year long. He's kind of back to where he used to be. This is about where he should be priced week to week. His fantasy scoring has really been struggling, though, really with the short par fours. We have a lot of sample with him, and it's just the short par fours are really kicking his ass. Luckily, we're focused a bit more on the longer par fours here at this course. It's a little bit long for a par 70, and he does all right enough. I just don't really like him in GPP. Only averages 0.8 fantasy points per hole, as where a guy like Rahm averages 1.1. A lot of the studs are averaging about 1 fantasy point per hole. He's down there at 0.8, although that has improved drastically over the last few weeks here. So I'm all about Scott in certain circumstances. I really had been about him a lot this year. His price was just too low. For many of the events that he played in, he was down the $7,000 range. This is about right for him. On FanDuel, he's way too expensive, so I don't really know what to make of Scott this week. I'll use him some. He seems like a safe enough play. I don't know. I personally like the likes of Koepka and a bounce back Kuchar and a Jimmy Walker more than I like Scott this week. It's like I almost want to. Usually, I would use Scott in cash. That's what I always did with Adam Scott. And now it's like you want to play him in GPP. And, you know, statistically, he does make a lot of sense for the course outside of putting. So I guess if he can get his putter together like Webb Simpson, then he's someone to watch out for. He's another former belly putter just trying to make it through. He hasn't figured it out like Webb Simpson has yet. But, yeah, Scott, I don't mind the play. He kind of projects a bit highly. And is cheap for a guy in the odds range that's similar to like Wise and Walker and such, but I kind of feel some of the guys around him a little bit more, including a Patrick Cantlay, $9,000, $10,900 on FanDuel. That's pretty good. Has played this event once in 2013 and withdrew. I want to say that this is either where he hurt himself or this is one of the weeks. Right after he had hurt himself initially when he was going through that severe, those severe back problems back when he was debuting in 2013. Remember that he was supposed to be like the next, I don't know about the next Tiger Woods, but he was supposed to be the next like up and coming huge golfer. And he still could be. He's very, very, very good. He's been awesome on tour so far this year. Missed the cut by one stroke at the Masters, and that's it. We have 23 events of data on this guy. 18 of them are cut events, and he has only missed that one cut at the Masters by one stroke. That's excellent. That makes a 95% made cut percentage. The adjusted field rank, 79%. So he's beating most of the field on a constant basis, hitting the ball long with a little accuracy, good greens regulation, and really good at avoiding the double bogeys or worse. Gaining strokes everywhere, mostly off of the tee. But his approach game is still pretty good. Just losing ever so slightly losing some strokes on the putting green, but that's all right. Patrick Cantlay is a play that I've always been about, and I'm going to continue being about, and I will never stop playing him until he sucks. Bryson DeChambeau, $8,800, kind of the opposite there for me, a play that I've always hated. Not just because of his stupid hat. Yeah, I know he has a really stupid hat. I hate that stupid looking hat. Looks like one of those guys that you would face in, like, the Tiger Woods video games to, like, advance a level or unlock a course. Like, one of them assholes. But Bryson DeChambeau, he is I wouldn't say a horrible course history here, but he's missed the cut by 1 and 2 strokes of the last 2 years. He's been in good recent form. It was looking a bit like Jimmy Walker there with those top 5 finishes. 2nd at the Arnold Palmer, 3rd at RBC Heritage, 4th at the Wells Fargo. And bled it back a little bit with a T37 finish at the Players, but that is the Players, that's Sawgrass. He is a fantastic par 5 scorer. Like, he just destroys par 5s. Take those away from him, that kind of sucks. You know, his big finishes have come on courses, at least as far as the Arnold Palmer and the Wells Fargo. Those are par 72s, long par 72s, the wide open fairways. The missed cuts, and I know he had the withdrawal at the Valspar, but that ultimately didn't really mean anything. We've only seen him miss the cut at the Farmers Insurance Open. That was several months ago at this point, so he's been on a fairly consistent roll. I know he had a horribly bad 2017 season. I think he had like 8 missed cuts in a row or something, but he's really turned it around. I know that he has not done that great on this course, and he has proven himself on these tight accuracy courses, at least with his 3rd place finish at the RBC Heritage. I just never really like playing him a whole lot, and I kind of don't like how he gains most of his strokes on the par fives, and you just take those away from him this week. You know, average field strength is nothing compared to a lot of your other high tier golfers, and the made cut percentage long term of 59%. It looks really bad next to Cantlay's 95%. But I'm sure a lot of you guys will be using DeChambeau anyways, and I really can't knock you down for that. And I'll probably even be using some of him myself. And the same goes for Jason Duffner, $8,700, 10-2 on FanDuel. He's been having some good success recently, although longer term, he's been kind of crappy this year, I'd say, outside of his last like few weeks. He had a pretty bad stretch, really all the way from the WGC Mexico onto the RBC Heritage. He only made 2 out of those 5 cuts, or 3 out of those 5 cuts, but the best finish in that length of time was a T54 finish at the Masters, and that was a missed cut. So, or if it wasn't a missed cut, it was like he just made the cut on the dot, I think, and he finished almost last there. And over the swing season, we saw that he played, I think it was 3 or 4 no-cut events, and outside of Brooks Koepka, he finished dead last in all of them. So while his made-cut percentage is really good, a lot of it does have to do with him just playing horribly at no-cut events, but just making the cut because it's a no-cut event. He's had some mixed success here at this course, and it would appear that he's only good every other year. If you look at the even number years, his last 3 events, in 2012 he finished 2nd, in 2014 he finished 2nd, 2016 he finished 6th, so who knows, maybe in 2018 he'll have another good performance. But if you look at his odd number years, 73rd, 43rd, 46th, 107th, man, that looks pretty bad, but there's no actual, like that doesn't matter. It's not a real thing. It's not like the number at the end of the year actually having to do anything with his results. Just a funny thing to point out there. So he's had a mixed bag here, but he's had some really, really good finishes. And usually he's a pin seeker. He's a ball striker type. Usually. This year, not so much. Just gaining 0.2 strokes per round approach. Usually that number is a lot higher. I don't know. I've just not been too impressed with Duffner this week, and I know he had the good finish at the Players, but if I'm not going to count missed cuts at the Players as highly, I'm also not going to count really good performances at the Players as much as I would at other tournaments outside of, like, of course, Webb Simpson's performance, which is pretty standout, but still, it's just such a random course with so much variance. I kind of like fading the guys that did really well there, and not may not have been doing that great elsewise. I don't know. I don't feel like playing Duffner a lot this week. The guys right underneath him are a lot better plays. I like Emiliano Grillo. He's still just been a made cut monster. A cash game, really just a week to week cash game play. You can lock him and load him all the time unless he gets too expensive. Zach Johnson, who's a beast at this course, had four top four finishes before 2014, where he ended up T73, just not great, but then turned it around with a couple top 20 finishes. And a T63 last year, was in a bit of a slump around this time last year, but still, this is a course that he is awesome at. And he hadn't missed a cut this year, and until last week, or 2 weeks ago at the Players, he had the MDF, finished 75th ultimately, just had a horrible Saturday, but really excellent at the medium length par fours, and there are six of those on this course, also good at the long par fours, really just good at everything we're looking for here. Good adjusted field rank, usually would have a better driving accuracy percentage than he does, but still gaining tons of strokes approach like he usually does, and really gaining strokes in every category, even putting it off the tee, and just a safe play. I would say cash again. I know a lot of people aren't a fan of what he did last week, because I think he almost scored negative fantasy points on the weekend. He did just poorly, but I don't know if one bad round at the Players is enough to get me off of Zach Johnson here, and odds to pricing is a really good value as well. And he's significantly more expensive on FanDuel at $10,800, and I still like him there. That's still not even a bad price at all. But the Griot at $10,000, that's a very nice play. A very nice play for FanDuel. Louis Oosthuizen is just overpriced on both the sites, 8-4 and 9-8 on FanDuel. No thanks. He's been bad. Chesson Hadley, someone we really got to consider here. He's been a top 20 machine, six top 20 finishes in a row. That's insane. The guy's been on a tear since the swing season, really. When he misses the cut, he misses the cut badly. But when he doesn't, he finishes top 20. That's like his MO. Better at long par fives and short par fives. Pretty good at par four scoring and par three scoring. Just overall fantasy scoring. He does a really good job. Lots of birdies and eagles for him. Really a lot of birdies, and just destroys his approach game and his putting game. Like, he loses strokes ever so slightly off the tee and around the green, but gains almost an entire stroke approach per round, 0.66 strokes gained putting per round. That's kind of exactly what the course calls for. The dude's a beast, and he's super cheap on play draft. Like, he is insanely cheap. You can steal him oftentimes. Especially if you can tell the guys around you are just going off of the projections. Really, Hadley is a nice play for all sites and formats. Xander Schauffele, he decided to finally quit being an MDF guy and came runner-up last week, or 2 weeks ago at the Players. You know, he's just sort of that. He's always been a real GPP guy. Not exactly like hit or miss, but yeah, I guess he can just be like hit or miss. Like at the Wells Fargo, he almost missed the cut, and we saw him finish second at that pro-am. Now maybe his amateurs were carrying him, but really he seems to have a wide spread of outcomes that can happen to him, and he has really, really high upside when he does hit, so I like using him in GPP. And then Kevin Kisner, $8,100, former winner, or the defending winner, actually, and three times in a row he's finished top 10 at this event, although he debuted with a missed cut in 2014. Granted, anything that has to do with Kevin Kisner, like 2015 and before, like, he was a horrible golfer for a long time. Like, he was a, like, Chris Stroud-level golfer. And then, I don't know, something clicked on him. Maybe he dropped acid and had, like, a spiritual experience or something. But something just made him a much better golfer. And that thing has kind of gotten away from him a bit this year. He's had some really poor performances, including most recently at the Wells Fargo and the Players Championship, had some really bad miscuts. So his form's in the toilet a bit. He was 7th at the RBC Heritage, so maybe a less than driver course will help him. But still, it's a matter of course history versus current form. And when have we seen this before? I know that a lot of our examples, the main examples we've made so far in the season, have been like scrub level guys like Luke Donald or KJ Choi. But so far this year, things have not been kind to the guys with great course history but bad current form. I think you need to have some good current form when you're making your plays, especially at a week like this. But you know, definitely take some shots in GPP because it's, you know, it's a kiz. I like him in certain formats, like on I keep plugging Play Draft, but I think it's just because I did a bunch of my lineups on there before getting on the podcast here. But I used Kisner in my dream team, that format where you can just use any five golfers, because, you know, I didn't want to take him in one and done necessarily, but I wanted to get him in something with a really high upside where he'd be super unique, and, you know, having the high upside of, you know, him being the defending champ and all, where I know nobody would use him because they're all using the top like 10 golfers. But those are the situations in which I like a Kisner. I don't like using a ton of him, but just a little bit as like a super high upside guy. Schneider Jans is just a horrible value play here. I like Steve Stricker a lot. We're getting into the $7,000 range now. He's 7,900, 9.3 on FanDuel, which is still a very good value. He was 7th here last year, makes a cut here every year. Has been a made cut machine overall, 84% made cut percentage, 79% adjusted field rank. That is superb for where he's at. The only thing I don't like about his game here is that he's by far the best at short par 3s and short par 5s, of which there are none of on this entire course. So that sucks for him in particular. Another interesting note is that he gains all of his strokes with wedges. He's not very good with his irons or long irons anymore. So at shorter courses, like, shorter courses are his freaking jam. You know, his double bogey or worse percentage is not even 1%. Like, he is by far the best in this field at that. He's so clean. Like, play him in cash games. I know he missed the cut in Houston, but honestly, the Houston Open's one of my least favorite events as far as like using it to predict other tournaments, because half the field's practicing for the Masters, the other half's in desperation mode. Like, Steve Stricker in particular was in desperation mode to make the really to have a high finish to get to the Masters, so he was probably taking some very uncomfortable shots for him. But usually when he's just at an accuracy course doing his thing and not at a long par 72, usually he is cash money at these events. So he is a cash game consideration and a really strong one in my opinion. You've got Charlie Hoffman, who has good course history here, just been kind of up and down and shaky. He'd been very consistent for so long, but missed the cut at the Valspar and missed the cut at the Players. I can kind of get over that, but I'd really prefer Stricker and maybe a few other guys in this range. Kevin Na at 7,800. He really performed as the chalk last week, like all of the chalk did. And, you know, he's been having an okay season, kind of up and down. But his course history here is pretty good as well. It actually mirrors Charlie Hoffman's in a surprising fashion here. He tied with Charlie Hoffman at this event in 2016, 2015, and 2012. So maybe play them together as a corollary or something. I don't actually recommend doing that. I'm sure that is just all random, but it's just weird to see they've tied here so many times. But looking at them both together straight up, not sure why I'm making this comparison here. Kevin Na's 50-1, Hoffman's 75-1, so I'd definitely rather lean Na here. And like I had mentioned earlier, he destroys long par 5s. He's just super good at saving birdies on those. He birdies them like more often than anything. And, you know, if you take distance off the table, it really makes a guy like Kevin Na stick out for me, because everything else about his game is pretty darn good. But he does do a lot of his damage around the green, and that's not the biggest help for you this week, but still, Na's in a good spot. And Harmon in GPP, Brian Harmon, this is a guy nobody's going to play. Horrible at the players. It's just awful, like dead last. He does that a lot. That's something I've always said about Brian Harmon. When he misses the cut, he misses it badly. He comes in like last. He's done that so many times. He made the cut, and he either got MDF'd or he like finished last of the people that made the cut at the Wells Fargo, T74 there. But before that, if you look farther back on the season, the dude's been fine. He's been really good, actually. Remember, he started out the season super hot, with all those top 10 finishes in a row in the swing season, fourth at Sony, fifth in Mexico. Even not too long ago at our last accuracy course, he finished 23rd at the RBC Heritage. I know he missed the cut in Wells Fargo and at Sawgrass. Those are some par 72s. But just look at what Harmon does well here. The medium length par 4s, you know those are going to be key. And he really kills all things par 4, but especially the medium length par 4s. He averages almost a fantasy point per hole at the medium length par 4s. And that's one of the best marks of the entire field, if not the best. I think he's tied with... Shubhankar Sharma ranks number one, but that is just due to him only having three events worth of data here. So he's outside of him, he is number one in this entire field in medium length par four scoring. That's going to be huge. The big thing with him is he's short off the tee. Take that off the table here, and he's great with greens regulation, driving accuracy, strokes gained kind of everywhere. He had been killing it more off of the approach, his approach shots earlier on the season. That's kind of gotten away from him a little bit, but he's still gaining strokes slightly in that regard. And he's always been a great putter. I think Brian Harmon is a super sneaky play, and he has four straight top 30 finishes at this course. Super sneaky GPP play. I'm going to put a little circle around Harmon this week. And Bo Hossler, $7,700. He was well overpriced last week, and he's come down significantly this week, and he may get lost a bit with some guys being better in Vegas odds than him, as he's 60-1 at the $7,700 range, but he still has seven made cuts in a row for him. And it's not like he did badly last week. He ended up T32, had a pretty decent weekend. He sort of struggles from the same thing that Steve Stricker does, where his best hole types are short par 3s and short par 5s, and there are none of them on the course. But still, he's someone to consider in this range. Russell Knox has some pretty sneaky history here, all top 25s in his two events that he's played. But he hasn't played here in a few years. He had a pretty sneaky top 20 finish last week, and this is definitely a course that's better suited for him. He also does well in the par 4 scoring categories. And then a few really, really nice plays once you hit the $7,600 range. Adam Hadwin has been a made cut monster so far this season. And didn't do the greatest at the Players, but still made the cut. And another guy that's shorter off the tee, but very, very accurate, very good with his approach shots. And Scott Piercy has been real up and down. He's always good GPP play, seventh here last year. The best in the field at strokes gained approach and greens regulation percentage, because that's his specialty. Very, very good at long par 4s as well. And also pretty good at medium length par 4s, but his specialty is long par 4s, and there are four of those on the course. And those four holes are some of the most difficult on the course. He does struggle with par 5s, and does better on short par 5s and long par 5s, but there are only two par 5s on the course. So Piercy, someone that I do like for GPP. I know he popped for people, and people played him in cash last week and kind of got away with that, but still, don't play a guy that misses cuts as often as he does in cash, but just know that he definitely has the GPP upside and fits the game statistically for what we're looking for. Another former winner here, Chris Kirk, $7,600 on DraftKings, 9-2 on FanDuel. Outside of last year, and mind you that last year Kirk had a really irregular season where he had a really bad streak. He just wasn't the same golfer they had been for years in the past. If you look past that, past his sort of his like yips phase, sort of like what we'd consider or Russell Knox to have been in, or Kevin Na to have been in last year, JB Holmes, Bubba Watson, you know, guys are struggling last year. look past that, and his course history is immaculate. Five top 16 finishes in 6 years for the dude, a win in 2015, and the one finish that was in the top 15 was still a T35 in 2013. And the dude's been sneaky about how good he's been this year. He's made, let's see here, almost every single one of his cuts this year. I can't tell you if he missed the cut by one stroke at the Career Builder. And at Pebble Beach, I think that was also a missed cut by a stroke. And then at Houston, he missed the cut by a couple of strokes. But other than that, he's 8 for 11 in made cuts. 8th in Texas, 11th at the Waste Management, 10th at Sony, 13th at the Arnold Palmer. So he's had some really sneaky finishes, and he's been kind of doing exactly what you want for this course. Good driving accuracy, greens regulation, strokes gained approach, and even some good long iron play. And going by the hole types, he's just good at everything, but better at long par 5s and short par 5s. Chris Kirk is someone I'm going to circle him as well. It's just I don't think he's going to be as owned as he should be. And if he's back to kind of playing like how he used to, then this is a course where he's going to smash. So I like that a lot. You've got Ryan Palmer, who always plays well in Texas, has 3 top 5 finishes here in the last 6 years. Another kind of sneaky play, although he's been missing a lot more cuts, and he's a lot more GPP than Cash. Like, I would consider Kirk and Cash, wouldn't ever touch Palmer and Cash. And then a guy that I can't even believe I'm recommending this guy week to week now. It's insane because he's so bad for so long. Rory Sabatini, the good Rory. he's been killing it lately. 4 straight top 30 finishes for the guy. And he has a ton of top 30 finishes on the year. 5th at Valspar, 17th at the Honda, 20th at Farmers. Just a really sneaky good season for him. And, man, I just can't believe that he just projects so well here. 10th in 2015. And statistically, you know, not the longest off of the tee like a lot of these guys. All the accuracy guys are coming out to play this course. But he's just gaining strokes everywhere. Maybe not so much approach as I would like, only gaining 0.07 strokes approach per round. But you can't deny that he's been just playing really well recently. It's just, well, we do see that his average field strength is -2%, so he does play at the weakest of the weak courses. And we did see him at the Corrales Punta Canas and stuff, but we may be seeing him in some stronger events here if he keeps playing like this. He looks like a douchebag, so if you see him in real life, you may not want to play him, but as long as you just don't look at him and just roster him anyways, he could do good for you. Chez Reavie at $7,600. If this was like 3 months ago, I'd be all in on the guy. but this is the exact kind of course that we're looking for Reavie at. So I know that he did well at the Players, actually. Top 30 there. But he had some missed cuts, like at Houston. Just barely missed the cut at the Masters. Or I think he made the cut, but finished like last of everyone that made the cut at the Masters. Missed the cut by a stroke at Valspar. But it's not too long ago that the dude had 2 runner-up finishes in a row at Pebble Beach and Waste Management. I know those are places that you wouldn't expect him to do well at, the longer par 72s, but this course is certainly suited for him. The big struggle I see with him are the long par 5s, but outside of that, anything on the short end, he really does succeed at. 69% driving accuracy, only losing strokes around the green, and that's forgivable. Good strokes gained approach, but not godly like it was in the beginning of the season. I don't mind using some Chez this week. And then Cameron Smith, he was horrible at the Players, but he's definitely a guy that could bounce back and has had some high upside finishes so far this year. And just a few names that stick out here. Brant Snedeker, still hilariously overpriced on DraftKings. Danny Lee, freaking shoot me, but I might actually use some Danny Lee, who had been garbage, like awful, horrible for so long, but has made 4 of his last 5 cuts, 7th place at the Players, and at this event, he's 4 for 4 in made cuts, and 3 of his finishes in the top 20, including a 6th place finish in 2017, 10th place finish in 2015. Might hold my nose and use a little bit of Danny Lee. Ugh. And Siwoo Kim as well, going for the all the $7,500 Asians here. Siwoo, this course is kind of, you know, he's not the longest off the tee, so it kind of helps him a little bit. And he's been making cuts kind of consistently, which is weird. Just gains all of his strokes off the tee. I don't like that, actually. And then JJ Spahn, who is back off the injury and looks fine, third last week at the Byron Nelson, just killing it as far as strokes gained approach goes. So I kind of like JJ Spahn, even though he withdrew at this tournament last year. Kevin Tway's been super consistent. We saw him pop off last week at the Byron Nelson. I say we keep rolling with him. We're still in Texas, and he is very much a Texas boy. Austin Cook has been just solid all year long. We have 17 events of data with him in events with cuts, and he's made 82.4% of his cuts. I think the dude is just really good. He's pretty solid. He hasn't posted any top 30 finishes recently, but he's been making tons of cuts and just finishing between like 50th and 30th. So he could potentially be a cash game play for you, honestly. It's just there are probably better cash game plays in this range. Like, I would say Tway, honestly. But he's someone to consider. And, you know, I've got to start abbreviating my way through the rest of this field, but I really need to point out that I almost don't want to point out because this guy's been crazy low-owned every week. I don't want to help, but Nick Watney refuses to ever be more than 2% owned. I swear, anywhere. He is always like 2% or less owned. What more can he do to convince people? How many cuts in a row has the guy made? Oh, every single one this year. 100% of his cuts. That's what we're on, like event 9 so far on the season. And he, at least since the Sony Open, and he has not missed a single cut. The guy's been a beast. Runner-up at Wells Fargo. Somehow nobody noticed, and nobody played him the next week when he was underpriced at the Players and did pretty well there, too. I can't understand it. I'm just going to keep smashing a Watney. I don't even care that he doesn't really fit the course all that well. You know, he's kind of a bomber, not the greatest off of the tee. But shoot, he could club down or something. He's just playing way too good, and he's way too cheap, and he's been way too low-owned. If I was on the new DraftKings betting market, I would almost bet Watney, just because I think what's been keeping his ownership low is he's been coming in at really like low numbers, well, I guess high numbers in the odds, like 100 to 1, 120 to 1, and he's kind of been surrounded by like 80 to 1 guys, and that's really kept his ownership low. Like here, same price as Russell Henley, who's 75 to 1 compared to his 85 to 1. And he has several other guys in that range, in the same price range he's at. So he could be low-owned again this week. But my God, the guy is just insane. Like, he's come off this injury 100%, and he is just rolling. He's back to being as good as he used to be. And he used to be like an $8,000, $9,000 type of golfer back in like 2015, 2016. But he's just been even more consistent than usual. Wait till we hit some of these courses where he has insane course history at. I know he has a few courses like that. Just watch out for Watney and just use and abuse him until they finally price him correctly. At $74,000, or $7,400, $74,000 be too much, and $7,500 on FanDuel, that's where I'm really looking at FanDuel. $7,500 on FanDuel, David Lingmerth. I know he hasn't been playing that well recently. But he has some really, really good course history. 4 made cuts at this event, and 3 of the 4 top 20 finishes, including a 12th place finish last year. Was anybody else screwed over by Martin Laird last week? I know I was, and a quarter of the field was. He was ranking so well in every single regard, but then finished like dead last in the field out of nowhere for a guy that just makes so many cuts. I think that's a bit of a warning sign for me. That's one of those missed cuts where you're like, I don't care about recency bias. Holy shit, I'm gonna take a step back. I'm taking a step back and just reassessing the situation with him. 150th. Like, he finished worse than like, he finished worse than like Tyrone Vanasvegan. He finished worse than Smiley Kaufman. That's what I'll say. He finished worse than Smiley Kaufman last week. I can't touch a guy that finished worse than Smiley Kaufman under any circumstances. Pat Perez, 7,300, 9,700 on FanDuel. I know he's been playing poorly, but he was so consistent for like a year straight. He made all of his cuts in a row, then missed the cut at the Masters when he was kind of fairly chalky for a punt play. And since then, Missed the cut by 2 strokes in Texas, by 3 strokes at the Players. I don't know. I mean, I could see Pat Perez kind of bouncing back here, and his price is really cheap, but I don't know. And then you got some similar plays, and guys like Grayson Murray, who was super popular last week and just played so poorly and withdrew. It was his first official rage quit on tour, although he does have some documented rage quits on the web.com tour, so just note that going forward. But he's still at 7-2. He makes for a decent value play, especially since no one's going to own him again after he broke everyone's heart and withdrew and didn't even give him the decency of finishing out the round for fantasy points, but just particularly screwed people. I think that's going to suck for him, but you know, it's not even a course that he'd do well at, honestly. He's kind of the bomber type. He gets a lot of double bogeys, but I don't know. Once you get into the lower $7,000 range, you can't be quite as picky. They're just some random shots in the dark who had been playing well until recently. I'm looking at Harris English and Kevin Streelman. Both have good course history, at least in the recent form for Harris, or for Kevin Streelman. He actually used to have pretty bad history here, but 18th last year. He had been rolling in particular and was a cash play week to week. But the Wells Fargo and the Players Championship, he just looked horrible. He just screwed over so many of us at the Wells Fargo Championship. Like, what the heck? But those are par 72s. He's kind of meant more for like your par 70s. You know, real driving accuracy kind of guys. So, maybe take some shots at Streelman. And then English just for GPP, because he has some top five finishes here. And we've seen with him that he does have some upside to randomly have like some top 10 finishes. But I don't know. He's been pretty bad recently. And Bill Haas also just been horrible recently. I don't care how well he's done here. He's missed like 4 cuts in a row now, like 4 out of 5. It's been bad. And Sean Stephanie, God, what is this, 2015? Why are we playing Sean Stephanie? But at 7,800 on FanDuel, 7-1 on DK, and 3 for 3 made cuts here, and 4 out of his last 5 cuts he's made, and actually had some top 25 finishes in that span. Shoot, maybe, I don't know, maybe sign me up for some Sean Stephanie at super low in ownership. Like, if he's been under 1% pretty much every week for good reason, but he's starting to kind of get it together. The good old Joaquin Niemann experiment is supposed to be like Aaron Wise now. He's supposed to be winning all these tournaments after that 6th place in Texas, but only one for four on the year in cuts made. That's not great. One of them is the Masters, sure, but I don't know. He's not missing cuts horribly, just by like 1 or 2 strokes, but I'm just not sold on him yet. Kind of will wait for a longer course to use him. Sean O'Hare, runner-up at this event last year, he's $7,100. We also saw him runner-up at the Texas Open not too long ago, but he also withdrew at the Players because he loves to withdraw. He's one of those guys that loves withdrawing. So with that risk in mind, you know, he also had the 7th at the Arnold Palmer, 12th at Valspar. Statistically, there's no case to be made for him, but, you know, he's just kind of playing him because he has that top 5 upside kind of out of nowhere. And Joel Dahman, $7,100. He's a guy, his odds are only like 180-1, but we've seen the results from him recently. 13th at Corrales Punta Canas and 16th at Quail Hollow and 16th last week at the Byron Nelson. He was horrible last year, but, you know, has had some good recent results. It is just important to note, average field strength minus 3%, that's pretty freaking bad. I think playing at the Corrales Punta Canas will do that to you. So you can't even use that as that big of a win necessarily. Cause yes, he has been playing at a lot of these fields that are just bad, like the Byron Nelson, Houston, even Texas wasn't good at all. So Dahman, the game log looks nice, but you know the odds 181, kind of keep it in check with Dahman. And then 7,000 and under, who knows? Like last week, for some reason, all of the Vegas movement came in on Andrew Putnam, and he did okay, T42. So maybe that's a name to look out for at just 7K. I don't know what happened to Patton Kizzire, but he's been horrible lately. So I know he has 2 wins on the season, but yeah, gross. And 6,900, Ben Crane, we've seen him making several cuts in a row now, and this, again, is an accuracy course where a guy that hits only 280 off of the tee can stay relevant. And he actually had three eagles at this event when he didn't win, but he finished third back in 2010, scoring 121 fantasy points with three eagles. So that's interesting. I'm definitely sure that he's not going to do that again. I can guarantee you that. And if you want a random course history guy from down here, Chris Stroud at $6,900. I know I just used him as an example of a bad golfer, but he's $7,500 on FanDuel. He has four top 15 finishes here in the last 6 years, so that's some course history right there. And man, you just might as well throw darts the rest of the way down. Adam Shank was a guy we were kind of looking at like min price last week, and even made the cut. So I don't know, like he's made like 5 out of 6 made cuts in a row, but his odds are like 300 to 1. Keep that in mind. And Abraham Answer, that guy has been awesome this year. I'm not sure if it's Answer or Answer or something. He's from Mexico. Not really sure how to pronounce it exactly, but your boy Abraham, outside of a horrible, horrible showing at Quail Hollow, finishing 134th. Outside of that, he's been a mid-cut machine. He didn't do great in WGC Mexico. He was the guy that was invited for being the top world-ranked Mexican. But you know, outside of that event, which was obviously a shark field or a shark tank, I guess I should say, and the Sony Open to begin the season, he's made about every single cut. 16th at the Valspar, 13th at Corrales Punta Canas, 8th in Houston. I know those are some crap fields, but also 20th at the Farmers Insurance Open. He's made 5 of his last 6 cuts. The one they missed was horrible, but at 6,700 on DraftKings, that's a bottom of the barrel play there for sure. 8,500 on FanDuel, no way. Don't do that. And then if you're gonna take anyone else from out down here, maybe John Ha, but he's been not that great. And then at dead minimum price, you got to kind of look at Ryan Blom. I know he had missed some cuts. I think he had missed 4 cuts going into last week, but he was 6th at the Byron Nelson. Played some pretty good golf. So if you're going to go YOLO and you have to go to the very bottom, like he's clearing away the best choice here. So that'll do it for the field. That'll do it for the podcast. We're a bit long here. Next week, I will be on location at the memorial, I'll try to have the pod out Monday night, Tuesday morning. We'll be leaving on Tuesday to go to Dublin, and should be a fun time. And be sure to check the Slack chat on Wednesday. Pretty much be like live tweeting, not really tweeting, but live Slacking my day as I go throughout there, talk to some players, talk to some putting coaches, and different things. Just get a feel for the environment. I know the course doesn't change much week to week, so there's not really as much to scout as there was at Quail Hollow, but it should be a really good time, really strong field, and a really beautiful course. So I look forward to that. And I'm not 100% sure if I will be able to get the podcast in next week, but hopefully I will be able to. And we could also have a special guest on there. Been saying about that, so you guys might be able to listen to more than just my droning voice on here from week to week, so that'll be exciting. Until then, go win this money, boys. Go bring home some more big caches. We've had so many big caches on the year for the DFS Army as a whole. You got to keep it running. So remember, dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO. Use that link in the description. Head on over to the site. Come check us out. Remember that even if PGA isn't your main sport, it's not like many other sites where you have to sign up for individual sports content. Just one low membership rate will get you all the premium tools you need for almost every daily fantasy sport there is. Baseball, golf, our NASCAR content's been kicking ass, just been making money over there in NASCAR. It's just free money. And our WNBA content's coming out strong. I mean, we cover it all. So check us out, dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO. This is TACO. And today is Tuesday. It's been the Taco Tuesday PJDFS podcast, and I will see you guys hopefully next week. Later.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.